Welcome to the Bad Podcast. We have a very special guest today, Matt Swain. Matt Swain is a Tyrone Class of 1984 graduate, a science and nonfiction writer. He has written over 5 books covering everything from why universities are so haunted to the supernatural and occult in popular music. Welcome to the podcast, Matt. Tell us a little bit more about what you do.
Thank you very much. So I guess I could say that, my day job is a science writer. So I take research from Penn State and turn it into stories and articles, which I try to spread broadly. But then in the evening, apparently, I'm into pseudoscience. So I write a lot about ghost stories of things that I find interesting. Initially, I started with ghost stories about, if I go the whole way back, I started with ghost stories about the Tyrone area. And I did that for a newspaper, the Daily Herald. And then I got into finding more stories about universities, and a lot of universities have a lot of ghost stories, which I find pretty fascinating. And from there, I landed a book contract, and I wrote a couple books about things that I would try to blend the history that I like. So I'm really interested in music history and rock and roll history. So I combined that with ghost stories about rock and roll, and then moved into World War II ghost stories, and then ended it up with some ghost stories about railroad history, which also, Tyrone is famous for. So that's kind of how I got here. My career as a writer is pretty unexpected for me, because I never really intentionally started to write about this. But it was just one of those things that I think a lot about what you're doing here is what happened to me. You know, I was born on Halloween. I was a reporter at the Daily Herald, and I wanted to do something spooky for Halloween, so I thought I would do some Tyrone ghost legends, and that's really how I got to where I was. Started writing there, and I found that of everything that I've ever written for the newspaper, that was the one that sparked the most interest. People came up to me everywhere, restaurants, bars, and wanted to tell me their ghost stories. And between you, me, and all the listeners, I'm freaked out by ghost stories. So it was not a pleasant experience to hear a lot of these things. But, that's kind of how it started, and that's where I'm at now.
So you mentioned the Tyrone ghost stories. What was, like, the first one that you started with?
Yeah, I mean, the ultimate Tyrone ghost story is Sylvia. And are you familiar with that one?
Kind of.
So Sylvia, for us, it was, the ghost stories has a lot of variations. And one thing I learned as I started collecting these stories is that you can compare them across ghost stories. It's kind of interesting. It's almost like anthropological or cultural anthropology. You can just kind of compare these stories. So there are a lot of variations to this story. But the story that I'm most familiar with Sylvia, and this happens above Reservoir Park, in the Janesville area. We call it the Phillipsburg Pike, and I think people in Phillipsburg call it the Tyrone Pike. But the story is that there was a couple, and they just got married, and they were driving from Tyrone towards the Phillipsburg area, and they pulled over, and in this story, they're pulling over to half a cigarette. So they start to smoke, and the ash drops off of the cigarette on the bride, and her name's Sylvia, and falls onto her dress. She catches fire, and she runs out into the woods, never to be seen again. And so the ghost story is, if you go there go up the pike, pull off the side, and in our story, you lit a lighter 3 times, but I've heard other stories where you flash your headlights 3 times, she'll appear. So that area is kind of haunted, and that was probably the first ghost story that I started with. The interesting thing about this is all over, really, I would say this area for sure, but Appalachia in general, you hear a lot of these stories that are the White Lady of the Buckhorn, for example. And that area, usually you hear right around Wapsonic, the area above the Altoona campus. There's a mountain. We call it, probably out west, they call it a hill. But there's a lady in white that will appear usually at the crossroads of that area. And that story is also similar, but it's, I think, a lot older in that there are numerous variations of that story. There's one story that this woman was in a wagon in the hill, and the roads that come off that hill are pretty windy, and the wagon flipped over and she died. She was crushed by the wagon. There are other stories that, and this kind of has like a Romeo and Juliet vibe, but there was a boyfriend and girlfriend, and the boyfriend was basically taking her from her house, from her family, and they were speeding away from the father, the irate father, and they wrecked in a car. So those are the origin stories of this, and you kind of see that, you know, people say that they'll be on the Buckhorn late at night, misty, foggy, and she'll appear, this white figure, this figure of a white woman, you know, appears in that story. So those are the kind of the stories I started with.
Yeah. Are these stories like something you like actually believe in, or are they just, you know, you like to write about them and they're interesting to you?
That is the key question, I think. So I guess I started probably like you're going to do. I started with these stories, and then I went out to try to find people who, you know, as a good reporter, you want firsthand accounts. What I found was that people would say, oh, I never saw it, but the lady down the street, her brother saw it. So there's always like these third-hand accounts. So, you know, whether I can't say that I really believe in it, but what I find is over writing so much about this, my questions went from do I believe in it to why do we tell it? Why are these stories so meaningful? And that became interesting for me. So I've never really talked to anyone that has seen it, but that's not to say there aren't people out there. But as I've written all of these stories, you can kind of see that there are different levels of this. There's the legendary aspect of it, which is what I write a lot about, the folklore aspect. But then there are other people who've had actual encounters who I've interviewed, not necessarily for Sylvia or the Lady in White or any of those, but I've had people come up to me and tell me some pretty, you know, creepy stories. So I guess I feel like I, as a journalist, I'm just kind of collecting these stories and getting as many different variations of them as possible, and then let everyone else sort them out, whether they believe it or not.
You're an author, obviously. What is your favorite book you've written?
I have to say it was The Haunted Rock and Roll. And, you know, to give you a little bit of background about that, I just wrote America's Haunted Universities. And they have acquisition editors at this publisher. And she called me and said, hey, you know, we really like this book and we want to work with you. Do you have any ideas for other books? And I had just read an excellent book by R. Gary Patterson, who wrote a book about A Walk on the Dark Side, which was about the occult in rock and roll and some of the occult legends. He didn't get really into the ghosts too much, but that was on my desk, and I thought, I just said, I'm going to do a book about ghost stories of rock and roll. And I had no idea whether there would be any. I knew there were a few. And so the next thing I knew, I was writing this book and I was getting, you know, deeper and deeper into these stories. And so that one was the most fun. And I think it was the, you know, probably like the bestseller of all that I've written. And it got me, you know, attention. And I was able to go on a couple national podcasts and radio shows to talk a little bit about it. But, you know, because I love rock and roll history, and then to have this other element, and it really, the other thing it did is it revealed just how important these ghost stories are, whether you believe in ghosts or not. It really taught me that there's just this incredible connection. It's almost like a cultural legacy that we have, that we can use these stories to keep these people alive, after Elvis died, after Janis Joplin and Jim Morrison died. And so I think that was definitely my favorite.
You said these ghost stories definitely freak you out still,
yeah,
right? What's the scariest ghost story you've ever heard or witnessed, maybe?
Well, you know, and And I'm not when I talk about whether I believe in these ghost stories or not, or whether I believe in ghosts, I have definitely talked to people who've encountered something they can't explain, and I respect that. And you can usually gauge these things by how it's changed their lives. But this is one of the stories. You know, I was at a book signing in Altoona, and a lady came up to me, and that's usually when they start telling me their freaky stories, and that's usually when I just, you know, be quiet. I don't want to hear anymore. But she started telling me the story, and she said, you know, I look at most of the people I talk to, there are either believers or cynics, and believers totally buy everything, you know, that's all paranormal, can't explain it. And then cynics, no matter what evidence you get them, they don't believe it. Well, she was a little different. She was completely indifferent to these stories. And she told me, you know, she never even thought about it. But she and her husband were antiquers, and they went to an antique show, went to an antique shop, and they bought an old antique rocker, a rocking chair, and brought it back to the house. And she said the moment that rocking chair was in the house, weird things began to happen. Strange, you know, moving of objects. She had a whole litany of things that happened. I think the thing that gave me shivers is her. I think it was her son, who's very young, would not go into the room where the rocker was, and then claimed to see that there was an old lady in the rocking chair. And at that part, I'm just, like, I'm out. But then she also said that they couldn't explain what was going on, but they knew that there was something different, and they decided they were going to get rid of the chair. And she said after her husband tried to get the chair in the SUV to go back to the shop to sell it or to get rid of it, he looked like he was beat up. It flew at him. He couldn't get it in. He was all cut up and looked like he was in a fight. It was trying to fight him. And I think that was probably one of the freakiest stories. Now, maybe none of that happened. She just decided to come out of nowhere and tell me this story. But what I found her very believable in that she came from this place of not believing in the supernatural at all to really believing in it. It was a life-changing experience. And some of these stories that we talk about, they're transcendental. They change lives. They offer someone, you know, a way to get past, like, the ordinary that's around us. And I think those are the types of stories that really move me the most, where someone has experienced something and their life philosophy changes.
Have you ever personally, like, had an encounter?
So I have a really high bar when it comes to what I would consider paranormal. I've had weird things happen. I, you know, lived in an apartment where weird things happened, but all of those things I could explain. Like the one time, you know, I was in the kitchen looking into the living room and the television turned on by itself. You know, with these remote controls, at least back then, you know, infrared beams can ricochet all over the place. And this was an apartment in a house with several apartments. So I can explain it that way. You know, one time my girlfriend at the time, my wife now, was visiting me. And I had gone to get her Sheets cookies. And they come in this little packet. And I put it on the table pretty far away from her. And she had her earrings, and she was going to put her earrings in. And she looked, and one of them was missing. And we spent, you know, 10, 15 minutes looking around for it. And she said, well, if you find it later, let me know. And she picked up the bag of cookies, and in the cookies was the earring. And to me, that's a heck of a shot that it would bounce maybe 6 feet back into this. It's possible. But it's a little weird. So I don't think I've ever had, like, anything I could classify as a pure encounter that some of these people have had that have talked to me. But it was definitely weird, and it makes me what I consider myself is an open-minded skeptic, which is, I don't know, but I'm willing to listen to your stories and be convinced.
What are, like, some, like, rock and roll haunted stories that you've...
Yeah, there's some great ones. I mean, there's the rock and roll ones go from some of the really funny ones to, you know, some pretty scary ones and everything in between. But the one that I always, is one of my favorites, is there was a Mexican restaurant in Santa Monica that people claimed when they would go in the bathroom, the men's room, that they could hear something breathing, and the door would rattle, and when the outside door would rattle, but everything would move and shake, the mirrors would shake. And it got so bad that the restaurant owner called in an exorcist or a medium to try to get rid of the spirit. But that actually was the recording studio of the Doors. And I don't know whether, do you guys know the Doors?
Yeah.
Okay. So that's a music band, late 60s. Jim Morrison was the lead singer. The bathroom itself was apparently the vocal booth for Jim Morrison. And people that were in the restaurant claimed that that restaurant was haunted by Jim Morrison. And I just love the idea that Jim Morrison, who's kind of like this madcap drunk, would haunt a Mexican restaurant's bathroom. I think that is the most perfect. But then you get into other stories about Jimmy Page, who was a guitar player for Led Zeppelin. And he lived in a home by... a mansion owned by Aleister Crowley, and Aleister Crowley was a magician from the Victorian age, and he was, they used to call him the wickedest man alive. And so this place was haunted, and in a Rolling Stone magazine, probably in the 70s, the reporter asked Jimmy Page, are there any ghost stories that you've heard? And he said, you know, I had a friend who was, you know, not drunk, not high, stayed overnight. And he woke up early in the morning and went to get the caretaker and said, hey, you know, next time, you know, next night, leave the cats out, because I could hear them playing in the hall. I could hear them rolling up and down the hall. And the caretaker said, you know, the cats were locked up the whole night. They were not in the hall. And so there's a story about this mansion, which I think is called Bulliskin Mansion, and it's in Scotland near Loch Ness, so it's got a lot going for it on the creepy scale. The story is that someone was beheaded there, and the head rolled down the hall that this person was, you know, sleeping overnight in. So the caretaker said he was probably hearing this, you know, this noise of someone's head rolling down the hall. But the kind of the kicker for me was the reporter said, have you ever heard the you know, head rolling down the hall? And Jimmy Page said, no, I've never heard anything like that. And then the reporter said, so you don't believe in it? And he said, I never said that. I said, I just never heard the head roll down the hall. So those are some of the stories. But the one thing about rock and roll that really gets me is it really starts with a ghost story, and that ghost story is about Robert Johnson. And Robert Johnson was a blues guitar player from the Delta, which is the home of the blues. And he was a kind of a terrible guitar player, but he really wanted to be a guitar player. So he would hang out with these great blues guitar players, people like Son House, who are legends, and they actually got a little tired of him. They just felt that he was hanging around too much and was a little annoying, so they basically kicked him out of the group and wouldn't let him hang out anymore. And so he disappears for about a year, and he comes back, and the story is, and you know, this is all historical. Son House has talked about this. They were all outside of a what they call a juke joint, you know, this bar. And they were in the parking lot smoking and drinking, and they heard this incredible guitar playing. And they're the greatest guitar players, and they're looking around. They're not playing the guitar. Someone must be. So they go into the bar, and there's Robert Johnson. And the story is he's up there, and this bare light is shining on him, and apparently he had cataracts, and so his eyes were almost glowing. And you know, so they could not believe that this guy was playing as well as he was. So the legend is that Robert Johnson, during that year, went to the crossroads, and this, the idea of the crossroads keeps coming up. It's a kind of a part of the story, a part of the plot that goes across these ghost stories. But Robert Johnson went there at midnight and met the devil and signed over his soul to the devil to become a great guitar player. And then probably about a year of fame and fortune, he dies in a rather horrific death. And so there are all these ghost stories about Robert Johnson and about that legend and about that area. That crossroads is still, you know, there, and people go visit. And our Gary Patterson, the guy I talked about, he had some experiences there with the supernatural. So I think that's what fascinates me about rock and roll is, you know, this is like your cultural legacy, and these ghost stories are almost like a map to it. So you can talk about all these different ghost stories and about Jimi Hendrix and Jim Morrison, and you could go from Jimi Hendrix to, you know, Little Richard and to Elvis Presley, and you'd get a real map. Because what I found as I went through this, and I wrote two books about it, is just about every key figure in rock and roll, there's some type of supernatural legend, either something that they experienced personally or that something, you know, after they passed away, people from Robert Johnson to Prince, you have these ghost stories. That's what I love about it.
Draven has it's kind of a silly question.
I love silly questions.
Do you believe in Bigfoot?
No. Maybe. Why not? You know, but you know, I don't want to get too weird, but you know, that legend is ancient, right? And so then again, when you get to the idea about, do you believe in these things? I don't know whether I believe in there's a physical big ape out there, but I do believe that that story means something to someone, and maybe it signifies something. And there's reasons why we tell these stories. Did I sidestep that enough?
What do you teach at Penn State?
So originally I taught a class, it was COM 260. It's a class in news writing and journalism. I also teach a class in science writing and science communication. And I've taught a couple first year seminars on media entrepreneurship, which you guys are doing right now.
Do you ever have like students try to tell you ghost stories?
All the time, yeah. Yeah, in fact, what I do, usually around Halloween, my class will go visit what I consider the most haunted part of Penn State, which is the Petit area. So we'll start off with Schwab Theater, and Schwab Theater's reportedly haunted by three ghosts. There's one ghost, apparently, of George Atherton, the president of Penn State, and there was one person saw a ghost of a Revolutionary War soldier, but you know, Penn State started in 1855, so we can't really explain that one. And then Schwab himself, Charles Schwab, is supposedly haunted that. Then we go over and we talk a little bit about Old Coley. There's a ghost of a mule on the Penn State campus, and that's a good one too. Petit Library is supposedly haunted by, there was actually a murder there in the stacks, which is the book, you know, the section of bookshelves there. And it is kind of creepy and mazy, but there was a woman was actually killed there, and her ghost apparently haunts that. And then Old Botany, which is the oldest standing building in Penn State, that reportedly is haunted too. But that's another case where when I wrote the ghost story about Penn State ghost stories, I really considered that just legend. And so I wrote about the legends of Old Botany. And the one story is that sometimes if you look at the top floor, you'll see a woman looking out kind of wistfully onto Schwab. And right next to Schwab is George Atherton's grave. And so people say that that's the ghost of Frances Atherton looking out on her husband's grave. And so I thought, you know, that's kind of a poignant story, and I didn't think much more of it than that. And then I met a janitor who worked there, and he told me he encountered so much creepy stuff that he asked to be on to clean a different building, because he would go in there, you know, second shift around 11 o'clock, midnight, and he said he encountered so much stuff he just couldn't handle it anymore. So there's one of those things where you have the folklore kind of overlaying with these real stories. And I think when you go into look into Sylvia and stuff like that, I think you'll see some of that as well. People might have had encounters, and it, you know, matches up with the legend.
Yeah.
Do you believe that, like, every college, university has a supernatural occurrence?
Well, you know, and this is kind of anecdotal. I never really did an actual survey of this, but what I found is there are most of your haunted campuses are in the Northeast to the Midwest. Ivy League has a lot of ghost stories. Penn State has a lot of ghost stories. Into Ohio, the Midwest. Juniata College has a lot of ghost stories. And all these ghost stories are really similar, by the way. But what I found was, and this is my only explanation, when Penn State and some of these other universities were growing, so Penn State started 1855, so after the Civil War is really its growth spurt. And if you think about that era, it was after the Civil War. There was a horrific trauma from the Civil War. And there was a spiritual system called spiritualism that took over and became really quite popular, which is about people who can commune, mediums who can commune with ghosts. So in a way, you might see that those universities started when people really took seriously ghost stories and ghosts and spirits. So almost every university has ghost stories, but the ones in the Northeast and the South seem to have the most.
Since you're into all these you know, ghost stories and all that, are you into horror movies, like the movie aspect of it?
Yeah. I mean, how I started was, you know, I was born on Halloween. I loved ghost stories. I loved horror movies. I love, you know, I've watched The Exorcist a million times. And so, yeah, I've always been, and, you know, the slasher flicks, I watched those. So that was really key to my career, if
yeah.
I call it that.
What's the scariest movie you've ever watched?
Oh, have you ever seen I think it's The Changeling with George C. Scott?
No.
That's super creepy. I mean, it doesn't seem that, but I think The Exorcist is pretty spooky, and it's based on a true story-ish. So The Exorcist is one of my favorites.
Those scary movies spook me out pretty easily.
Yeah.
So they all seem pretty scary to me.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm the same way. I went to see Amityville Horror when I was, I think, 13, 14, and I did not sleep that summer. Just like when I saw Jaws, I didn't go swimming for weeks. So even in a you know, swimming pool, it was freaky enough.
There's a thing about, like, have you ever heard of the Annabelle doll?
Yeah.
Do you believe in, like, there's, like, a spirit within that?
You know, I know that's one interpretation, and one of the things that I found was, you know, that you have in these ghost stories, you have haunted houses, haunted buildings, but haunted objects is a completely different thing. And so, you know, when somehow a spirit becomes attached to a doll or something like that, that's actually ancient too. You go the whole way back to almost prehistoric times, and you have fetishes and mm-hmm. dolls and things like that. So as far as believing whether it's a spirit, I don't know, but I know that that is a powerful spiritual element. You've kind of created a human being, you know, and so there's a lot going on there.
All right. Thank you so much for your time.
You're welcome. I really enjoyed it.
Yeah. We'll catch you guys next week on episode 3. See you guys.